Well, as always, it's good to be with you on the Lord's Day morning. I always enjoy and am blessed by being in the service here and miss it when I'm gone. I'd like to tell you just a little about the meeting in which I was engaged this past week by the small congregation, Humboldt, Tennessee, about 11 or 12 miles north of Jackson, Tennessee. We had about 46, I believe, on Sunday morning, and I believe that was the smallest attendance of the meeting, because just about all the members were back every night of the meeting, and we had visitors from other places, and so the building was well filled each night of the meeting, in spite of the small congregation. The fact that each member was there every night was just an interesting feature of the meeting. One brother told me that he had to get up at 3:30 in the morning, but he was there. Others had to drive for 45 minutes to an hour to get there, but they were there. And I look forward to our meeting, which will begin in October, early October, the 4th, is it? And I just hope that we will do the same thing. It would be thrilling to have every member of this congregation present every night of the meeting, plus the visitors who will come. We'll just have an overflow if we do that. And it'll be worth it, well worth it. There are only two extra nights that we don't come anyway, Monday and Tuesday night, short meeting. We used to have meetings 3 weeks, then they cut them to 2 weeks, then they cut them to 6 days, and now they're shorter than that to enable us to be present. And I just hope that you'll be planning to be present for every service of this gospel meeting. My wife and I will be leaving Tuesday, the Lord willing, for a meeting in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And we'd appreciate your prayers for that effort. While I was away in Pennsylvania the last time, I was introduced to a concept that I really was not aware of. A brother I was talking to spoke about the company for which he worked, and he said they had a program of succession planning. He said that they were aware that managers and supervisors sooner or later might be leaving, some going to other jobs, some retiring, some maybe even dying while they were on the job. And they wanted to be sure that there were people prepared to take their place. And so they would pick out certain individuals who were subordinates, who showed special leadership skills, special managerial abilities, and they would give them rather special training, give them special projects to get them ready for the time when there would be a need for a successor. Well, I'm not that familiar with business affairs, but I have talked to some since I've been back and learned that this is characteristic of many companies. I remember that Jesus said that the children of this world are wiser than the children of light, and sometimes that's the way it is. Now, the fact that business practices this does not make it right as far as God's work is concerned, because there are many things practiced in business that would not be approved in the service of the Lord. But as I heard him speaking about that and have talked to others, I realized that this is a very, very much a biblical concept, that we recognize that there's going to be another generation. Now, as far as we're concerned, personally, we live every day as though Jesus was coming today. But at the same time, we live our lives realizing that he may not, that we're not going to live forever. One of these days, we're going to be removed from the scene, and it's very important that there be individuals ready to continue the work, whatever it may be, that we're doing in the service of the Lord. This was practiced by Old Testament heroes. In fact, there's an interesting thing said by God to Abraham. God had long-range plans. They looked all the way down to the coming of Jesus. But he knew that there would be a succession of generations, and it was very, very important that there be training and planning for future generations. And so he said concerning Abraham, I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after them, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. He said, I'm confident that Abraham will be the kind of person who will train his children to succeed him in the fulfillment of my plans and purposes. It's very obvious that Moses trained Joshua very early, of course, when the first military campaign was to be exercised. Moses didn't lead the army. He had Joshua to do it by the direction of the Lord, I believe. When Moses went up into the mountain, he took Joshua with him when he was going to receive the Ten Commandments and the law of the Lord. Joshua didn't go all the way, but Joshua went far enough. In addition, Samuel trained a body of prophets. It's spoken of as a school of prophets. I don't get the picture of a school building and classes every day, but a body of prophets who were influenced by Samuel. And over a period of some generations, we read of the continuation of this group of prophets who were encouraged by others who followed Samuel. Elijah anointed Elisha by God's direction to succeed him. Elijah thought that everything was lost, but God had future plans. We need to understand that. No matter how terrible things may seem to be, no matter how hopeless they may seem to be, God still has plans. God still has a work to be done. And when we're gone, God's work will continue. And we need to be just as Elijah was, mindful of finding someone who will succeed us in that particular work. And God designated Elisha particularly. Many good kings failed because they failed to train their children after them. Hezekiah was one of the best kings in all the history of Judah, and yet his son was the very worst king in the history of Judah. Josiah was a great king, another excellent king, a good man, but his sons were not good kings at all. And consequently, this failure many times brought great, great disaster upon the people of God. But of all these who trained for the future, none can compare to Jesus. You remember Jesus had many disciples, hundreds, perhaps even thousands, who followed him at some period in his life. However, he chose 12 special disciples whom he called apostles. And Mark tells us the reason for which they were chosen. First, that they might be with him. There was no way that the impact of his life and his teaching could be felt by all the multitudes. They would be able to experience something, but they needed more. And his successors particularly would need to know him better. And so he chose these 12, and they were with him wherever he went, associating with him, observing him, learning from him the things that he had to teach. But in addition, he chose them that he might send them out to preach. And we have a record of his sending them out. And I would suggest that that's practice teaching. We understand when an individual is going to be a teacher in the public schools, that in the training process, he's allowed to do some practice teaching. And Jesus sent these men out. In the 10th chapter of the book of Matthew, we read of his sending them out on what we sometimes call the limited commission. And when they came back, they reported to him, so that they could discuss the successes they had had, the failures they had had. He promised them that there would be a blessing for them, but he also warned them that there would be persecution. And as he warned them, he was preparing them for what they would experience after he was gone. And he said, if they have called the master Beelzebub, what are they going to do to his messengers, his servants? He gave them special teaching, especially toward the end of his life. Again and again he withdrew from the multitudes and went far up into the north, even outside the borders of Israel, in order that he might be with them in a special close communion, preparing them for the future. It wasn't that he loved them more than he loved anybody else, but they needed special preparation because the responsibility for teaching and preaching was going to fall upon them particularly. And so he was concerned for them. And in that very last conversation, just before he went to die, the several chapters in the book of John, beginning with chapter 13 and going right on through 17, all those chapters, nearly a fourth of the book, are taken up with that period he spent with those 12 men, 11 after Judas left, of course, preparing them for the future, so that they would carry on when he was gone. He promised them the Holy Spirit to assure the accuracy of their memory and to provide them with further information beyond what they had at the time. And so Jesus then commissioned them in Acts 1:8 instead of 8:1. He said, "You'll be my witnesses in all Jerusalem and Judea, Samaria, and to the uttermost parts of the earth." And in John the 20th chapter and verse 19, he said, "As the Father hath sent me, so send I you. I'm leaving, but the work is not finished. You must carry on." And when he commissioned them, he taught them to teach others to do what he had just told them to do. In Matthew 28, 18 through 20, he said, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. You go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe whatever I've commanded you to do." He had just commanded them to make disciples, and now he says, when you make disciples, you command them to make disciples, and so on down through the centuries, the gospel would be preached and disciples would be made. The Apostle Paul clearly followed the example of Jesus. He took young men with him from the very beginning. On his first evangelistic tour, he took John Mark. And when John Mark disappointed him by going home, when the traveling got a little more difficult, he didn't allow that to discourage him. On his very next journey, he took young Timothy to go with him. And Timothy and Titus and others were clearly being trained for the future. Younger men being trained by an older man. 2 Timothy is preparation for succession. It's the last book that Paul wrote. And right on down to the last chapter, he's urging Timothy to remember the things that he's been taught and the example that he has seen. Especially he mentions that in the third chapter. And then he urges him to carry on the work after he has gone. He warns him of enemies he's going to face, difficulties that he's going to have to endure. But he's preparing him for the time when Paul, within just a short time, would lose his life for the faith of the gospel. Paul urged Timothy to prepare for succession when he left the field. He said, "The things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit this to faithful men who will be able to teach others also." So Paul taught Timothy. Now he says, "Timothy, you teach faithful men to teach faithful men to teach faithful men right on down through the ages." Now that just means, my friends, that every one of us has a responsibility to train those who will follow us in the work that we're endeavoring to do. And those who are not wise enough to think in those terms are actually rebuked in Psalm 49, verses 10 through 12. He says, "Wise men die, likewise the fool and the senseless person perish, and leave their wealth to others. Their inner thought is that their houses will last forever, their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. Nevertheless, man, though in honor, does not remain. He is like the beasts that perish." All of us one day will perish unless the Lord comes. All of us will leave this world, but the Lord's work must go on. And it is urgent that we train those who will succeed us. I believe that gospel preachers have a special responsibility along this line. All too often, older preachers begin to be just a little bit jealous of their position and to become overly critical of younger preachers. Well, younger preachers have a lot to learn, just like older preachers do, however old they may become. It's our responsibility not to discourage them, not to be critical, though we can point out error, we can certainly rebuke weakness, but it is our responsibility to encourage younger men to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ after we are gone. I believe it's good for us to have someone who is especially identified to be trained and taught. I'm glad that it was decided to have Wes Gossett work with the congregation here. We're supporting him a minimum amount so that he can give his full time to study, teaching classes under the guidance and direction of the elders and of David, as David assists in a special way in the training of Wes. And I think all of us have seen his progress. And just now he's in the state of New York, in Albany, preaching for this month. And I received a letter from a lady there who's a member of the congregation expressing her deep appreciation for Wes and the work he's done, and regretting that they didn't make better preparation for his coming, perhaps even preparing a gospel meeting in which he would do the preaching. It's been good, and I think Wes would tell you, and everyone who has observed his work would tell you that. Perhaps others can be trained in that way in the future. But we shouldn't be just training individuals for, as we say, full-time preaching work, work in which they'll be supported and make their livelihood. We need to be training young men to preach the gospel and to teach the word besides those who are supported for that purpose. For many times they're going to find themselves in places where they cannot be supported, but the gospel needs to be preached. I told you about that congregation in east of Pittsburgh, where two young men identified that location and went there not to be supported with their preaching, but to preach as they had opportunity and as they were needed, one going to school, the other with employment. Others have come into the congregation and they do all their own preaching and send out funds, actually, to assist the preaching of the gospel in other places. These men need to be given an opportunity to preach. And I have appreciated the fact that the congregation here has been willing to give men opportunity to preach who have not been particularly trained as preachers, but who have been taught the Word of God and who are given an opportunity to exercise themselves and learn through the experience of preaching. Preaching just a little bit like swimming. You can't teach a person to swim without getting him into the water. And it's hard to teach a person how to preach without getting him into the pulpit, facing an audience of people who will listen to what he says, or in some instances not maybe listen to what he says, and let him get the experience of both. I've appreciated your willingness to do that. And last year particularly, we used a number of men in that respect. And, of course, a lot of the preaching here is done by men who are not supported. But it's effective preaching, and I believe the congregation is to be blessed for its willingness to give this kind of opportunity, as well as to enjoy this marvelous benefit from the preaching of such men. Gospel preachers have a responsibility to train others so that when they're gone, there'll be others to take their place. Not only that, but elders have such a responsibility. Often we wait until an eldership is just about to be dissolved. Maybe we've gotten down to two or three, and one is old, and another may be sick, and another may be moved away right quickly, and you just never know what's going to happen to dissolve an eldership. But we don't want that to happen, and with good reason. It's a tragedy when a congregation has had elders and suddenly do not have elders. It's traumatic. I can tell you that from experience. And so we wait, though, sometime until that time, and then frantically begin looking around to see who can we appoint an elder. That's almost like when a plane starts down and the pilot has had a heart attack, and you say, who can fly this plane? Well, it's too late to start thinking about that then. It needs to be prepared for in the future. And I hope that the planes I fly have made such preparations with another pilot who may not be as experienced as the captain, but one who can take over in case the captain, for some reason, quickly is indisposed. Now, this is important as an eldership. We need to be preparing men, getting men ready for this work. And the fact is that as soon as men are prepared and are qualified, they need to be appointed so they can get experience with the older men who are elders of the congregation and won't be just plunged immediately into something with which they are unfamiliar. I remember asking Brother Bruce Crawley in Birmingham why it was that the 77th Street Church always seemed to have a large number of elders. He said, well, as soon as a young man is baptized, we begin talking to him about being an elder. And he particularly mentioned Willis West, that as soon as Willis was baptized, said, I said to him, now you need to begin preparing yourself to be an elder. And of course, this congregation here at Ember Hills had benefited from that preparation over a period of many years that Willie served as an elder of this church. We need immediately to begin encouraging young men to think along those lines, to begin learning the Scriptures, to keep themselves pure so that their reputation will be untarnished when the appointment is to be made. They can truly be blameless. They need to take this into consideration when they marry, because who an elder marries has an awful lot to do with whether he really can do his work properly. We need to urge them to rear their children with a view to being elders of the church in the future, with children who are under proper control. I remember a young man, well, this dates me, but I was in the wedding of a young man a number of years ago, many years ago. And he said to me at the wedding, he said, "My goal is to be an elder of the church." He said, "My father was an elder, and I want to be an elder someday, and I'm marrying someone that I believe will be a good elder's wife one day." She was the daughter of an elder. As life went on, they didn't have any children. They were biologically unable to have children, but they adopted a couple of children, brought them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord so that they were faithful Christians. And sure enough, he was appointed an elder, served for a number of years, and finally now has died. I told you it would date me, didn't I? But I have thought about that for many, many years as I heard about his good office as an elder and saw him functioning as he did. I remembered that it was a goal. It wasn't something just happened. It was something he had prepared himself to do. I've appreciated the effort the current elders have made, before I became an elder this time, in the training of others and in guidance of others, and it'll pay off, I believe, in the future. The help of the congregation is needed to identify individuals who should be encouraged in the eldership. Too often, the work of a congregation is to find fault with men who are suggested to be elders. Let's see what wrong we can find in them. Those qualifications are not given to disqualify. They're given to qualify. Now, very young, perhaps, men can look at those qualifications and say, "Now, where am I weak? And wherever I'm weak, I need to improve." And we can encourage them in improving and not wait maybe until the time when elders or men are suggested for the eldership and then start picking at them. But if you see a fault in someone who appears to be a good prospect for an elder, go to him now and say, "I'm looking forward to the time when you'll be an elder of this congregation. But there's one thing I believe you really need to work on, and I believe you can improve in that area, and I'm encouraging you to do that." Let every one of us realize the importance of the part we play in the matter of having good elders, not simply this year or next year, but if the Lord delays 10 years from now, 20 years from now, I'm hoping that some of these fine young men over here will be elders, and some of the young ladies perhaps will be encouraging them in that. What a great future this church will have if that's accomplished. I rejoice in the fact that several who have left this congregation are now elders in other places. May God help us to continue that. Whether they're here or there, we're contributing to the kingdom of heaven when we encourage young men to become elders of the church. Bible class teachers need to do the same thing. Children's classes can certainly profit from having an assistant or a helper. Experienced teachers, can profit from having less experienced teachers in the room working with them. But think what the less experienced teachers are learning. We've done that here. I trust we'll continue to bring in younger people who haven't had any experience in teaching children to let them sit in with the older teachers, more experienced teachers, and learn from those more experienced teachers the art of teaching children. And adults the same. We've had some good teacher training programs here for the older adults, men and women, and it's a valuable thing to do, and the future is bright when we have Bible class teachers properly trained. Song leaders need to train others in that regard. I knew one congregation where one man led all the singing, year in, year out. And he would have been unhappy if anybody else had been asked to lead a song. He did it all. And then suddenly he moved away. And there was not a single man in the congregation that had any experience leading singing. It was a difficult thing. We finally got a brother trained, but it was difficult to do so. We need to be having training classes for young song leaders, and I'm glad we have that. Appreciate the young men who are participating in it, as well as those who are actually working with it. As parents, we need to realize that being a father, being a husband, is not just something you know naturally. I think we've had that erroneous idea sometime in the past. Being a husband takes a lot of wisdom and a lot of understanding. Being a wife, the same. Being a mother, a father, is one of the most challenging responsibilities anybody has ever had. And you don't know how to fulfill the responsibilities of being a husband and a wife and a mother and a father without some training. And who's going to do the training? Well, sometimes we look to people of the world. I have some books written by worldly people designed to help men and women make good husbands and wives. It's far, far inferior to the book God has given us. But these principles in the New Testament and Old Testament need to be brought to the attention of husbands and wives and parents and of children. And who better to do that than the parents themselves? We sometime in the church have classes on husbands and wives and parents and the like, but a child is going to be more influenced by his own parents than by anyone else. They're going to become to a great degree what we are, but that's not automatic. We need to do some teaching. Solomon, that he was instructed by his father. In Proverbs, the 4th chapter, beginning with verse 3, he says, "When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me and said to me, 'Let your heart retain my words, keep my commands and live. Get wisdom, get understanding, do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth.'" And he goes on and encourages his son, Solomon, to be wise. And it's no accident that he was wise. Well, you say God gave him wisdom. Yes, but he was wise enough to ask for that. When he was a very young man, God gave him a choice of whatever he desired in order to be a king. And instead of asking for riches and instead of asking for power, he asked for wisdom. Where did he get the wisdom to ask for wisdom? His father taught him to do that. He said, wisdom is the principal thing. Get wisdom. Are we as parents, fathers, teaching our sons that wisdom is the most important thing for them? The wisdom particular that comes from the fear of God, which is the beginning of wisdom. King Lemuel, and I don't know who he was. This is in that little appendix to the Proverbs. But in Proverbs 31, beginning with verse 1, the words of King Lemuel, the utterance which his mother taught him. "What, my son? And what, son of my womb? And what, son of my vows? Do not give your strength to women, nor your ways to that which destroys kings. It is not for you, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes intoxicating drink." She taught him to be careful about his relationship with women. She taught him to be careful not to get drunk, to be intoxicated. She taught him a lot of things. Good mothers teach their children. They just don't leave them to the school to teach them everything. They don't leave them to their companions to teach them everything. They don't leave them to books or television or the internet to teach them everything. They teach them. Mothers and fathers teaching their children. Why? Because my son is going to be a husband one day. My son is going to be a father one day. My daughters are going to be mothers and wives someday. They need to be trained. They need to be taught so they'll know what to do and how to do it. That the next generation, succeeding generation, we're talking about succession, the succeeding generation will have good fathers and husbands and wives and mothers. Older women are to teach the younger women. Now, that's a relative term. He didn't say old women. He said older women. And we have to confess and understand that that's relative. Some are certainly older than others. And those that are older than others have the responsibility to share. In Titus, the second chapter, he says that older women likewise are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderous, not given to much wine, teaching good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands. The word of God may not be blasphemed. A responsibility then for succeeding generations lies in the hands of parents. Solomon, assuming he wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, thought about the future. And in context, he said, I must leave all my labor in which I have toiled under the sun to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? That's a good question, isn't it? We work and work and work to build a reputation. We work and work and work sometime to collect a little bit of income to leave to our children. We work and work to give them an education. We work and work even to build up a congregation with good teaching, good preaching, good singing, good other things. But who knows whether those who follow us are going to be wise or foolish. To a great degree, what they are will depend on what we have trained them to be and how we have trained them to prepare them for succession. May I emphasize the importance of example? But that's not enough. We need not only to give them an example, which may actually be affected by other examples they see that may destroy the effectiveness of our example, but we need to teach them. And when they make mistakes, we need to correct them. But above all other things, encourage them in doing the things that are right. If you're not a Christian this morning, we'd like to urge you to think very seriously of becoming a Christian. It's the most important decision you can possibly make. The Lord has been good enough to arrange for His Word to come all the way down through the centuries to you and to me. Just imagine if He had come and lived His life, died for our sins, been buried and raised and went back to heaven, but had made no arrangement for future generations. But He loved this generation just as surely as He loved that generation. He prayed for His apostles, and then He prayed for those who would believe on Him through their word. He was concerned for you, for me, and consequently He made arrangements for the message to come right on down through the centuries to us. How are you responding? Are you responding faithfully to Him, or have you failed to respond as you should? We're going to sing an invitation song. If you're not a Christian, we'd urge you to come in obedience to the gospel, believing in Jesus, turning from sin to be baptized into Christ. Or if you have been an unfaithful Christian, if it's simply something you know between you and the Lord, confess it now to Him. You don't need to make a public confession. But if it's something public that has been a discouragement to others, you need to correct your influence immediately. A good way to do it is to say to everybody, I've sinned, but I want to be a better example in the future. Stand and sing to encourage you.